Hello, I'm Will Stein, and welcome to Geography Island Jams. This podcast is in the same style as the BBC Radio 4 Desert Island Disc series, whereby each episode I ask my interviewee what 8 songs, book, and luxury item they would want to take with them if they were stranded on a desert island. For rights reasons, the music has not been included in the podcast. You can find links to the 8 songs on the LSE Geography and Environment website. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Geography Island Jams. Today with me, I've got Erica Pani. Erica is the director of the MSc Local Economic Development Masters in the Department of Geography and Environment at the LSE. She joined the LSE just a year ago, having previously worked at Queen Mary University as a lecturer in economic geography and regional development. In fact, her attachments to Queen Mary run deep as she studied there as a mature student for her undergraduate degree, master's and PhD. She also undertook a postdoc at Newcastle University. Before coming into academia, Erica had a varied career, which includes running a stained glass company. So I think it's safe to say that she doesn't quite fit the profile of your stereotypical academic, especially at the LSE. So welcome, Erica.
Thank you very much for having me, Will.
So to kick off, can you tell me more about your recent appointment as the director of the Local Economic Development Masters? So like, what does the role entail, and is there anything you're most excited for?
Well, I started, as you said, September last year. I was taking over from the amazing Neil Lee, who's now a professor and had already followed in the footsteps of two extraordinary people, Andres Rodriguez-Pose and Ricardo Crescenzi. And they're still an integral part of the programme. So I'm just one of a line of directors. I'm not anywhere near as immense as those people, but I must be bringing something to the role. I'm not exactly sure what it is. However, I'm very much looking forward to now taking over as full director. Neil taught me the ropes in my first year, and I was very appreciative of that to him. And he will be holding my hand just a little bit more for this year to come. Am I excited about anything? It's an amazing program. I get to work with some of the most amazing people ever, and the students, if last year's cohort are anything to go by, are fantastic. And I'm a very lucky person.
So as you said, you've been at LSE about a year now. Do you have any favorite spots on the LSE campus?
Well, it's funny that you ask that question, because I like very small, quiet spaces. So in my first year at the LSE, I actually didn't have an office. So I discovered all of the nice little secluded spots around the entire university, one of which was in the senior dining room, the coffee shop just next to it. And then I really liked the cafe underneath the new academic building. So just around the corner, there are some high stools that you can sit on, and it gets very quiet around there. And then I also discovered the basement of number 32 Lincoln's Inn Fields, which I really enjoy going down to. I think it's called the Coffee Bean or Coffee Counter.
The Bean Cafe.
That's the one. And so Bean I really like to take my laptop computer and just, you know, go and sit down somewhere quietly and relax and do my work.
Now, I'd say the bean counter is one of my favorites as well, and they do some special, I've forgotten now, but
they do good food there, and it's just a really nice atmosphere. They got lots of plugs to plug your machine into. We're really lucky. We're in the heart of London. We're on the Aldwych. We have an amazing campus with lots of historic buildings and new buildings as well. So we have a really eclectic architecture around us. And I just think we have a very vibrant atmosphere. It's a great place to be.
Perfect. And now we're going to begin the music. Can you tell me about the first song you're going to be taking with you?
Well, I've decided to do my songs a little bit in chronological order. And I have some really special memories from my childhood. My mother is English and my father is Italian, and they both had an immense love of music, but my father really liked Tom Jones, and he used to have a poster of it, him, up in his wardrobe, and he would look at the poster of Tom Jones and, you know, try to tuck his vest into his underpants and sing all of his songs. He had a very good voice. And so my first choice is Delilah, which apparently is a really bad choice of music because it's a bit sexist, but by Tom Jones, and I really like it. So that's my first song, Delilah by Tom Jones.
So can you tell me a bit more about your childhood? Whereabouts did you grow up?
Well, I could basically say that I grew up in two places. Until I was 6 and a half, we lived on a council estate in London, in Southwark. I was essentially born homeless because my parents were from both from very poor backgrounds. And so my mum actually had to lie about where we lived, in inverted commas, so that I was born in a hospital in North London, close to where her mother and stepfather lived. So I grew up really in South London. Then at 6 and a half, I moved down to Portsmouth with my mum, dad, and my sister. And we bought a house in Old Fawcett Road in Portsmouth. And I actually still live in Portsmouth, although I rent a flat in Fulham with some friends so that I'm closer to the university for coming into work.
And so you grew up between South London and Portsmouth. So did you spend the majority of your time growing up in Portsmouth?
From the age of 6 and a half, I've got this amazing memory of my childhood. So I remember ever such a lot from being in London. For example, my sister regularly leaving me on street corners so that I could find my way home. This probably helped develop my memory, to be fair. And she was 4 and a half years older than me, had quite a lot of responsibility looking after me and just keeping an eye on me. I'm sure she did a very good job because I'm still alive now. And then when we moved down to Portsmouth, it was actually my sister that found the school that we needed to, that we ended up going to, called Cottage Grove Infant School. And yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed being in Portsmouth and growing up in Portsmouth. I have a knowledge of the place, kind of like, you know, the taxi drivers in London. They have what's called, is it the Taxi Driver's Bible or something like that? And they remember all the different streets. I mean, I can basically take you to anywhere in Portsmouth and know something about it because I used to ride my bicycle all the time to get around. So I have a real knowledge of the place. But yeah, that was the nice thing. I'll tell you the nice thing, Will, about living or growing up both in Portsmouth and in London is that actually Portsmouth is thought of as having a kind of Cockney accent, very similar to one in London. And so I grew up with other kids whose accents were all very similar to the ones I'd come from. So I didn't have to change too much in terms of oral recognition.
We're now moving on to your second song. Can you tell me what it is and any reasons why you're taking it with you?
Well, I think that my formative years in Portsmouth were probably between the ages of 9 and 11. And I went to a school called Cottage Grove, and I was coming towards the end of it at that point because it was a middle school. And I was about to leave to go to the Priory. But there was this amazing place that we used to go to. Now, what was it called? The Brook Club. That's right, the Brook Club. And it was on another council estate close to Cottage Grove School. And at that time, ABBA had just become really famous with Waterloo and going, they were on the Eurovision Song Contest. And of course, by that time, they brought out Dancing Queen. And you couldn't go to that discotheque without having Dancing Queen played at least once. And all my friends, we would all stand around in the conventional circle and dance. And that was just such a lovely memory for me of coming to the end of that school before going on to the new one and a sort of coming of age, if you like, at into the years of puberty and moving on. So that's my second choice, Dancing Queen by ABBA.
So we've got some more childhood questions. So did you have any childhood ambitions growing up? And if so, were they the same as what you're doing now?
I have got to tell you, Will, in all honesty, I had absolutely no ambition other than to survive from one day to the next. Wow. Whilst that might seem slightly drastic, it really is true. I just was happy if I managed to get through the day without getting knocked over by a car or something. And I didn't really think that much of the future. Once I got into my teens, I was a little bit more targeted, in fact, far more targeted, but nothing to do with what I'm doing now. I came into academia really, you know, quite late in life, but it had nothing to do with that. I was really far more interested in sport. So I thought that I wanted to be a PE teacher.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And in fact, everybody at my school thought that I would be a PE teacher. So.
Oh, that's so funny. God, I would never have thought PE. I suppose it surprised you when people have their other career path they would have chosen, you know, like a parallel universe sort of thing.
Oh, man, I have lived so many parallel lives. I know, I really have. I just thought that because I was so interested in sport myself, I thought that that's what I would want to do. My father used to play for the training squad for Milan, AC Milan, when he was a young man. And he and I used to play football. I'm saying football, but what I really mean is football with a balloon, because my mum wouldn't let us have a ball in the house. So we used to get into the passageway, blow up a balloon and play football with a balloon in the passageway. Unfortunately, my dad was severely injured in a traffic accident, both when he was young and then later in life. So he had a huge scar on his forehead, but also a metal plate in his leg, which stopped him from carrying on with his own sporting capacity, which was immense. And I used to do athletics at school. But one day I was walking past the PE office and I heard them saying that the goalkeeper for the hockey team hadn't turned up. So I knocked on the door and I said, when you're a goalkeeper, isn't that the one where you're allowed to kick the ball? And the PE teacher said, yes, yes, it is. I said, well, I like kicking balls, actually, and I'm really quite good at kicking balls. If I don't have to wear one of those stupid skirts, maybe, you know, I could stand in for you. So anyway, she said, yes, we lost 3-0, but apparently I was quite good. So she suggested that at the ripe old age of 15, that I maybe take up the sport of hockey as a goalkeeper. So I tried out for Hampshire, which I'd got in, and then I tried out for the South of England, which I'd got in, and then I tried out for England under 18s, which I got in. And I ended up playing hockey for England under 18s and indoor hockey for the under 21 squad. So that all comes, I'm sure, from having played football with a balloon in the corridor with my dad.
Can you now tell me about the third song you're going to be taking with you?
Well, that's one that apparently my sister reminded me of this. I used to play it all the time. It's called Oblivious by Aztec Camera. And she reminded me the other day when I was talking about the songs that I might like to play, that this was one that I listened to all the time. So I went onto YouTube, found a copy of it, and I thought, my goodness, I'd forgotten all about that one. And I really did play it repeatedly. I must have driven everybody mad. So that's my third song, Oblivious by Aztec Camera.
So the next few questions are a bit foodie. So to start, do you have a favourite dish you like to cook?
You know, when I looked at this question that you were going to ask, I thought, oh my goodness, fancy going down the food route with me.
Why did you say that?
Well, because I've had to change my diet so drastically over the last few years that all of the foods that I eat now are so boring and tedious, because I'd had a sort of, not an accident, but my back a bad moment, I'll call it, with my back. Mm. And it actually affected my gut really quite badly. And so I had to change all of my eating habits a lot. It's one of the reasons that I'm quite slender, let's put it that way. But I like cooking for other people. So my favorite dish to cook for other people is a vegetarian lasagna, which I used to enjoy eating very much myself as well. But if I, now that I can't eat pasta, I just remove the pasta from it and basically make a good parmigiana, which is a sort of aubergine and tomato with mozzarella and lots of Parmesan cheese baked that goes into the oven. Yeah, it's very nice. But those are my favorite dishes to cook for either a special occasion or for other people.
So now you're cooking your vegetarian lasagna, let's say. You're having a dinner party and you're allowed to invite one special celebrity guest. They can be dead or alive. Who would it be and why?
Well, for me, it really is a no-brainer. I met this person once in Rome. I had been in Florence looking after a villa, which is an extremely long story in and of itself. And if you ever get me in a pub with a glass of wine, I might share that story with you. But for now, I had decided I wanted to go and see the Eurythmics in Rome because they were playing there at the Palais. And I bought myself a train ticket. And before I went, I thought, you know, I'd really like to see the stage setup. So being who I am, I found the number of the stadium in which they were playing. I think it was either in Sweden or Finland. I can't remember. It was one of the two. And I phoned the stadium and asked if I could speak to the tour manager. I don't know what possessed me, to be fair, but they just said yes, thinking that I must be somebody, and put me through to the tour manager. So I explained that I was merely a fan and that I had this intention of going to Rome and that I had understood that they were going to be filming that particular concert. And I wondered, therefore, if I could go and see the stage set up before the concert. And this guy was lovely. He said, yes, absolutely. You know, if you come, on the day, we'll take you around for half an hour. So I thought, okay, that's great. So I got myself a train ticket, go to Rome. And a little thing in the back of my head just said, look, don't bother about going to your accommodation. Just walk across to the Palais and find out where it was. So I did, and which was miles. I mean, it was right across the other side of the city. And there were some big coaches outside the stadium and these bodyguards. And I said, I went up to one of these big bodyguard people, you know, security guards. And I said, hi, my name's Erica. I'm here to see the stage set up. I've come a bit early. I'm a day early. I wondered if I could come in anyway. And they went, oh, well, let me just go and speak to the guy. I think his name was Keith Morris or something like that. So they went in, spoke to him. He said, yeah, bring her in, bring her in. So they showed me round. I got to play Dave Stewart's guitar. I mean, it was amazing. They were so nice to me. I had lunch with the crew. And then I was about to shove off. And the guy said, aren't you going to stay and see the dress rehearsal? And I nearly fell over because I just loved Annie Lennox forever. And I said, well, what, the whole band is going to be here? Yeah, yeah, Annie Lennox, Dave Stewart, the whole lot. Yeah. So I was in the middle of this stadium, Will. I had my single lens reflex camera with me. I had a 1200 speed film in the camera. And I asked if I could potentially take photos. They said, well, you have to ask Annie Lennox. And she was standing over yonder speaking to their backing singer, Joanice Jameson. So little old me, I went over and I said, is there any chance I would be able to take some photos? She said, are you the press? I said, no, I'm just a fan. She said, yeah, no problem at all. So I stood, I know, honestly, serious. It's the kind of thing that it makes me say to students and to everybody, if you've got a burning desire or you want to do something, just pick up the phone and ask. Mm. because you'll be amazed at where it can lean you. So I ended up with these amazing photos, which I can share with you one day, and this incredible experience. So the person I would invite to dinner is Annie Lennox from the Eurythmics.
Oh my goodness. I take it you must have a Eurythmics song coming up.
I do. It's Who's That Girl? I think it's one of the best songs that they've ever produced. And what I like about the video, if you go onto YouTube and watch it, you can spot all of the old stars from the 1980s in the video. And not just singers, but also actors and actresses. So Meryl Streep is in it and everything like that. But it's a fabulous song. And I will never forget those experiences ever in my entire life.
So, as we mentioned earlier, you came into academia as a mature student. What drew you into going into academia?
Well, my partner's an academic, that's for a start, and I had got to know a little bit about her work and geography as well. And I really wanted to, I was coming towards the end of a time in my work that I wanted to change. And so I thought that I'd maybe like to go and study because we needed to move up to London. My partner was very fed up of commuting from Portsmouth to London. It was very tiring. And so we thought we would move. And really, I wanted to know a little bit more about my place in the world. I didn't really understand the world particularly very well. I couldn't figure out politics. I couldn't figure out world dynamics. So I thought, well, geography maybe sounds like a good subject for me to go and study. So I applied to Queen Mary as a matured student, and I got in as part of their sort of widening access program. They didn't ask me to do an access degree or anything like that, which I was really lucky with. They just took me as I was. And I will never forget that and will always be extraordinarily grateful to their kindness and accommodation for somebody who had really no experience at all in geography.
Just another Queen Mary one, but do you have any favourite experiences from your time there?
Oh, gosh. Favourite experiences from my time at Queen Mary. Okay, so I'm going to let you into a secret. I'm a bit of a David Harvey fan, I'm going to admit it. And because I was such a David Harvey fan, the department asked me if I would like to chair the seminar with him. He was with us for a few days. And so I got to sit next to David Harvey and ask him all sorts of questions. Now, as a follow-up from that, I was invited to go to a David Harvey session at the LSE before I started working at the LSE. And I got to sit with David Harvey at dinner. And I asked from his plate, the little shells that were hit from his clams. So he was eating vongole. He was having spaghetti alle vongole. And so they had little clams. And so I said to him, would you mind if I took two of the shells that...
Oh, my goodness.
I know. And they are actually upstairs in my bathroom. Oh. No, see, I'm not sure I should share these things with the rest of the world. But I still have the little invitation to the David Harvey dinner and the clam shells from his spaghetti alle vongole. So, yeah.
The invitation's fine. It's just funny how, you know, it's like David Harvey's the Beyonce of the geography world. That, you know, they touch, you want to...
You know, I didn't even know who the heck he was before I went into academia. And I went to the library and I was thinking, I'll go to the geography section. So I go into the library, this at Queen Mary, and there was this book with a green cover called Condition of Postmodernity by David Harvey. And I thought, oh, that looks interesting. I'll take that one out and read it. Bingo. That was me sorted. I mean, the rest of my economic geography career is history because everything just flowed from there.
Moving on to your fifth song, can you tell me what it is and any reasons why you're taking it with you?
My fifth song is called Deadwood, South Dakota. It's by Nancy Griffith. And it has probably the best opening line to any song that I've ever heard. I'll let the listeners decide whether or not they like it as well. But I was introduced to Nancy Griffith by a young lady who I did stained glass work with. So before I came into academia, I worked in the print industry as a production manager for about 7 years in total. And before that, I had my own small business in stained glass. And Melissa, who still does stained glass, had a very eclectic musical taste. And she was appalled by the fact that the only band I ever listened to was the Eurythmics. And so she decided she really ought to open my horizons, especially if we were going to stand in the same workshop together and work all day. And she introduced me to Nancy Griffith. So that's my fifth song, Deadwood, South Dakota.
How did you get into doing stained glass making?
Well, what as I said, I was going to kind of be a PE teacher. I decided against it. My mum thought that I would make an excellent civil servant, which was just a disaster. I hated every second of it. And I wanted to do something with building because I really enjoyed I'm a very practical person. And I like working with my hands. So I went and did a BTEC in building and architectural studies at Highbury College, which is at the north end of Portsmouth Island. And whilst I was there, I had the very good fortune of fixing someone's guttering. And whilst I was up that ladder, a guy called Gordon Bradshaw, who was a local artist and sculptor, was walking along to come into the house. And he said, "Good God, a girl up a ladder. What are you doing up there?" I said, "I'm fixing this guttering." He said, "You ever done any stained glass?" I said, "Good God, no." He said, "Do you fancy doing some?" I said, "Well, I've never done any. I guess I could try." So on a Saturday, he hired me to go and work with a friend of his, Fred, who was an old stained glass maker in Portsmouth. And Fred taught me how to do stained glass on my Saturdays. And so I ended up working with Gordon, doing all sorts of interesting jobs from repairing statues to repainting ceilings and making a lot of stained glass windows. So I have that moment of being up a ladder fixing someone's guttering to thank for me setting up my own business in stained glass.
So we're now moving on to your sixth song. Can you tell me what it is and for any reasons why you're taking it with you?
Well, my sixth song is actually a Tanzanian song, and it's called Atarudi by a little group called Harmonize. The song has really nothing to do with me at all, in that it's about this guy whose wife and mother of their children left while the children were very young and left him to bring up the kids. And he struggles all the way through his life, and eventually the kids grow up really well and they leave home. The woman in the meantime, she lives the life of old Riley, and he hears all of the rumors of how well she's doing. And eventually in old age, she falls on rough times, and she comes back thinking that because he's such a kind-hearted man that he will take her back and support her. But he actually tells her to sling her hook, which I kind of like. I think it's a bit poetic and justice. And I heard this song while I was out in fieldwork in Tanzania, because that's where I do a lot of my research. And one of my research assistants, Dennis, who I love very dearly, he's a terrific guy. He explained the song to me because my Kiswahili is so terrible, I couldn't really understand what it was about. And he explained it with great passion. So that's why I like this song so much. So that's my sixth song, Atta Rudy by Harmonize.
So can you tell me more about your research you did in Tanzania? What were you looking into and what did you find?
Well, I do research with my research partner, Martina Manara. She's a PhD student in the department. And we look into land tenure formalization, so property rights in Dar es Salaam. And we've been working together for the past four years it is now, going out into the field, doing what we call embedded field work. So we've stayed in the slums of Dar es Salaam for 4 months at one point. And then we did another 6 weeks last year. And what we're looking at are people's motivations for taking up or not taking up, at the moment, the residential license. And then we're continuing our work to look into the full title deed, which is called a certificate of right of occupancy. And the reasons that we look at these motivations are not generally because we believe that everybody should have a formal property right in a Western model or anything like that, is because the conditions that people live in are really drastic and they're very hard going for a lot of people. And we wanted to find out whether or not other systems of property rights might work just as well as formal systems in Dar es Salaam. But actually what we found is that between 80 and 90% of respondents of our huge survey that we did actually want to have some kind of proof of ownership that is backed by the government. So I'm not somebody who's going to argue with that kind of response rate for any political reasons that I might have myself, even though I might believe that it's maybe politically imposed. People want it. And people are desperate to have some kind of security in their lives. So that's why we go there and we do that research.
Can you now tell me about the seventh song you're going to be taking with you?
Well, my seventh song is a song by another lady called Nancy Scott. It's called Worn Out Getting Wise. And Nancy Scott was a very good friend in a musical duo with Millie Marlowe. Wonderful name, Millie Marlowe. And they play kind of folky country music, I guess. I don't think they would like me describing it in that way, but I'm not really sure how else to describe it. And they were very good friends of my partner, who I met in Austin, Texas, at the Dog and Duck pub, where Millie and Nancy Scott used to play quite regularly. So that's my seventh song, Worn Out, Getting Wise by Nancy Scott.
Last couple of questions now. Do you have any pet peeves, anything which bothers you considerably more than anything else?
Very simple. People being unfair to one another. It's as simple as that. I like to see people being treated equally and fairly.
And then my final question is, what is your favourite thing about being at the LSE?
Well, I think it has to be the colleagues that I get to work with and the student body. All in all, it's a really great experience. It's hard work, there's no doubt about that, but it is a great experience and it's a fabulous place to be to teach and to learn. And I find that I'm learning new things every single day from all the people that I get to work with and meet. So yeah, I feel like I'm a very lucky person about being there.
And then finally, but by no means the least, can you tell me about the eighth song you're going to be taking with you?
Well, I do have one other passion in terms of music other than the Eurythmics, and that's Queen. If there was one person I would have liked to have met other than Annie Lennox and invite to dinner, it would be Freddie Mercury. I never got to see the band play. So my final song is Don't Stop Me Now by Queen.
Fabulous. So we're now moving on to the final section. So you're allowed to take with you the Bible, the beverage report, and a book of your choice. what is the book you're going to be taking with you?
Right, I'm going to be really naughty and ask if I can take a compendium of like the 10 greatest works of philosophy, if you don't mind. I've always wanted to read philosophical books, and I was trying to find one that I really wanted to take with me, but I couldn't pick one, Will. So I found the 10 greatest works. So can I take that, please?
Well, if we can find a copy or PDF of them all together, I'm sure we can let that one slide.
Thank you very much.
And then, yeah, so that's your book. And then what will your luxury item be?
Well, my luxury item has got to be a never-ending supply of egg, beans and chips. That's fried egg, please. Heinz beans I would prefer, although Waitrose ones are very good as well, and chips with some Mother's Pride white bread and butter. I'm not allowed to eat bread and butter, but I figure that if I'm going to fade away on a desert island, I would like to have some Mother's Pride bread and butter to dunk in the corner of in my fried egg. And that should be washed down, I have to say, with a good glass of Prosecco or something like that.
Very lastly, what is your quote of choice?
Well, this is actually from Aristotle, who's one of my favourite philosophers. I don't know much about philosophy, I have to say, but Aristotle seems to pop up quite regularly for me. And it's the following. We are what we repeatedly do. Excellence is not an act, but a habit. And it's a philosophical quote that I think a lot of us could really take on board. We get good at something by repeatedly doing it. It's not a one-off act. So that's my favourite quote.
Perfect. Well, Erica, that brings us to the end. Thank you very much for sharing your Geography Island Jams.
It's been a pleasure, Will, and thank you very much for having me.